door which the conjunction of the spheres has closed on us. From there, from behind the closed door, magic sometimes extends its hand to us. For us. You know that, don't you? You have already felt the touch of that magic, the touch of the hand from behind that door. That touch filled you with fear. Such a touch fills everyone with fear. Because there is chaos and order, good and evil in all of us. But it is possible and necessary to control it. This has to be learned, and you will learn it, Ciri. That is why I brought you here, to this stone which, from time immemorial, has stood at the crossing of veins of power, pulsating with force. Touch it. The boulder shook, vibrated, and with it, the entire hill vibrated and shook. Magic is extending its hand towards you, Ciri. To you, strange girl, surprise, child of the elder blood, the blood of elves. Strange girl, woven into movement and change, into annihilation and rebirth, destined and destiny. Magic extends its hand towards you from behind the closed door, towards you, a tiny grain of sand in the workings of the clock of fate. Chaos extends its talons towards you, still uncertain if you will be its tool or an obstacle in its design. That which chaos shows you in your dreams is this very uncertainty. Chaos is afraid of you, child of destiny, but it wants you to be the one who feels fear. There was a flash of lightning and a long rumble of thunder. Ciri trembled with cold and dread. Chaos cannot show you what it really is, so it is showing you the future, showing you what is going to happen. It wants you to be afraid of the coming days, so that fear of what is going to happen to you and those closest to you will start to guide you, take you over completely. That is why chaos is sending you those dreams. Now, you are going to show me what you see in your dreams, and you are going to be frightened. And then you will forget and master your fear. Look at my star, Ciri. Don't take your eyes from it. A flash. A rumble of thunder. Speak, I command you. Blood. Yennefer's lips, cut and crushed, move silently, flow with blood. White rocks flitter past, seen from a gallop. A horse neighs, a leap, valley, abyss, screaming, flight, an endless flight. Abyss. In the depth of the abyss, smoke. Stairs leading down.
Vaesa. Direath Ipigyan. Something is coming to an end.
What?
Elaine Blatt. Fienavid. Child of the Elder Blood.
Yennefer's voice seems to come from somewhere afar, is dull, awakens echoes amidst the stone walls dripping with damp.
Elaine Blatt, speak.
The violet eyes shine. Burn in the emaciated, shriveled face, blackened with suffering, veiled with a tempest of dishevelled, dirty black hair. Darkness, damp, stench, the excruciating cold of stone walls, the cold of iron on wrists, on ankles. Abyss. Smoke, stairs leading down, stairs down which she must go, must because...
Because something is coming to an end.
Because
Teth Diread, the time of end, the time of the wolf's blizzard is approaching, the time of the white chill and white light.
The lion cub must die, for reasons of state.
Let's go, says Geralt. Down the stairs, we must. It must be so, there is no other way, only the stairs, down.
His lips are not moving. They are blue. Blood. Blood everywhere. The whole stairs in blood. Mustn't slip. Because the witcher trips just once. The flash of a blade screams death. Down. Down the stairs. Smoke. Fire. Frantic galloping. Hooves thundering. Flames all around.
Hold on. Hold on, lion cub of Sintra.
The black horse neighs, rears. Hold on. The black horse dances, In the slit of the helmet, adorned with the wings of a bird of prey, shine and burn merciless eyes. A broad sword, reflecting the glow of the fire, falls with a hiss. Dodge, Ciri, feign, pirouette, parry, dodge, dodge, too slow.
The blow blinds her with its flash, shakes her whole body. The pain paralyzes her for a moment, dulls, deadens, and then suddenly explodes with a terrible strength, sinks its cruel, sharp fangs into her cheek, yanks, penetrates right through, radiates into the neck, the shoulders, chest, lungs.
Ciri?
She felt the coarse, unpleasant, still coolness of stone on her back and head. She did not remember sitting down. Yennefer was kneeling next to her. Gently, but decisively, she straightened her fingers, pulled her hand away from her cheek. The cheek throbbed, pulsated with pain.
Mama,
groaned Ciri.
Mama, how it hurts! Mama!
The magician touched her face. Her hand was as cold as ice. The pain stopped instantly.
I saw,
the girl whispered, closing her eyes.
The things I saw in the dreams. A black knight. Geralt. And also... you. I saw you, Lady Yennefer.
I know.
I saw you. I saw how...
Never more. You will never see that again. You won't dream about it any more. I will give you the force to push those nightmares away. That is why I have brought you here, Ciri, to show you that force. Tomorrow, I am going to start giving it to you.
Long, arduous days followed. Days of intensive study and exhausting work. Yennefer was firm, frequently stern, sometimes masterfully formidable. But she was never boring. Previously, Ciri could barely keep her eyes open in the temple school, and would sometimes even doze off during a lesson, lulled by the monotonous gentle voice of Neneca, Yola the First, Frosvitha, or some other teacher. With Yennefer, it was impossible, and not only because of the timbre of the lady magician's voice and the short, sharply accentuated sentences she used. The most important element was the subject of her studies. The study of magic. Fascinating. Exciting and absorbing study. Ciri spent most of the day with Yennefer. She returned to the dormitory late at night, collapsed into bed like a log, and fell asleep immediately. The novices complained that she snored very loudly and tried to wake her. In vain. Ciri slept deeply, with no dreams.
Oh, gods,
Yennefer sighed in resignation, and, ruffling her black hair with both hands, lowered her head.
But it's so simple. If you can't master this move, what will happen with the harder ones?
Ciri turned away, mumbled something in a raspy voice, and massaged her stiff hand. The magician sighed once more.
Take another look at the etching. See how your fingers should be spread. Pay attention to the explanatory arrows and runes describing how the move should be performed. I've already looked at the drawing 1,000 times. I understand the runes. Vort, chelme, ys villowy. Away from oneself, slowly, down quickly. The hand... like this? And the little finger? It's impossible to position it like that without bending the ring finger at the same time. Give me your hand. Ouch! Not so loud, Ciri. Otherwise Neneca will come running again, thinking that I'm skinning you alive or frying you in oil. Don't change the position of your fingers. And now perform the gesture. Turn. Turn the wrist. Good. Now shake the hand, relax the fingers, and repeat. No! No. Do you know what you did? If you were to cast a real spell like that, you'd be wearing your hand in splints for a month. Are your hands made of wood? My hand's trained to hold a sword. That's why. Nonsense. Geralt has been brandishing his sword for his whole life, and his fingers are agile and... very gentle. Continue, my ugly one, try again. See? It's enough to want to. It's enough to try. Once more. Good.
Shake your hand. And once again. Good. Are you tired?
A little.
Let me massage your hand and arm.
Siri, why aren't you using the ointment I gave you? Your hands are as rough as crocodile skin. But what's this? A mark left by a ring, am I right? Was I imagining it, or did I forbid you to wear any jewellery? But I won the ring from Myra, playing spinning tops, and I only wore it for half a day. That's half a day too long. Don't wear it any more, please.
I don't understand. Why aren't I allowed?
You don't have to understand, the magician said, cutting her short, but there was no anger in her voice. I'm asking you not to wear any ornaments like that. Pin a flower in your hair if you want to. Weave a wreath for your hair. But no metal, no crystals, no stones. It's important, Siri. When the time comes, I will explain why. For the time being, trust me and do as I ask.
You wear your star, earrings and rings, and I'm not allowed. Is that because I'm...
a virgin? Ugly one.
Yennefer smiled and stroked her on the head.
Are you still obsessed with that?
I have already explained to you that it doesn't matter whether you are or not, not in the least.
Wash your hair tomorrow. It needs it, I see.
Lady Yennefer?
Yes?
May I... as part of the sincerity you promised, may I ask you something?
You may, but by all the gods, not about virginity, please.
Siri bit her lip and did not say anything for a long time.
Too bad, sighed Yennefer. Let it be. Ask away.
Because you see,
Siri blushed and licked her lips.
The girls in the dormitory are always gossiping and telling all sorts of stories about Billotine's feast and others like that. And they say I'm a snotty kid, a child, because it's time...
Lady Yennefer, how does it really work? How can one know that the time has come?
To go to bed with a man.
Siri blushed a deep shade of crimson. She said nothing for a while, then raised her eyes and nodded.
It's easy to tell, said Yennefer naturally. If you are beginning to think about it, then it's a sign the time has come.
But I don't want to.
It's not compulsory. You don't want to, then you don't.
Oh.
Siri bit her lip again.
And that... well... man.
How can you tell it's the right one to...
go to bed with?
Hmm.
If you have any choice at all. The enchantress twisted her lips in a smile. But don't have much experience. You first appraise the bed. Siri's emerald eyes turned the shape and size of saucers.
How's that? The bed?
Precisely that. Those who don't have a bed at all, you eliminate on the spot. From those who remain, you eliminate the owners of any dirty or slovenly beds. And when only those who have clean and tidy beds remain, you choose the one you find most attractive. Unfortunately, the method is not 100% foolproof. You can make a terrible mistake.
You're joking.
No, I'm not joking, Siri.
As of tomorrow, you are going to sleep here with me. Bring your things. From what I hear, too much time is wasted in the novices' dormitory on gabbling. Time which would be better spent resting and sleeping.
After mastering the basic positions of the hands, the moves and gestures, Siri began to learn spells and their formulae. The formulae were easier. Written in elder speech, which the girl already knew to perfection, they sank easily into her memory. Nor did she have any problems enunciating the frequently complicated intonations. Yennefer was clearly pleased, and from day to day was becoming more pleasant and sympathetic, more and more frequently taking breaks in the studies. Both gossiped and joked about any old thing. Both even began to amuse themselves by delicately poking fun at Neneka, who often visited their lectures and exercises, bristling and puffed up like a brooding hen, ready to take Siri and her protective wing to protect and save her from the magician's imagined severity and the inhuman tortures of her education. Obeying instructions, Siri moved to Yennefer's chamber. Now they were together not only by day, but also by night. Sometimes their studies would take place during the night. Certain moves, formulae and spells could not be performed in daylight. The magician, pleased with the girl's progress, slowed the speed of her education. They had more free time. They spent their evenings reading books, together or separately. Ciri waded through Stamelford's Dialogues on the Nature of Magic, Giambattista's Forces of the Elements, and Richert and Monk's Natural Magic. She also flicked through, because she did not manage to read them in their entirety, such works as Jan Becker's The Invisible World and Agnes of Glanville's The Secret of Secrets. She dipped into the ancient yellowed Codex of Myrthe, Ad Erkane, and even the famous, terrible Du Dwimmermorg, full of menacing etchings. She also reached for other books which had nothing to do with magic. She read The History of the World and A Treatise on Life. Nor did she leave out lighter works from the temple library. Blushing, she devoured Marquis Lacréam's Gambles and Anna Tiller's The King's Ladies. She read The Adversities of Loving and Time of the Moon, collections of poems by the famous troubadour Dandelion. She shed tears over the ballads of S.C. Darwin, subtle, infused with mystery, and collected in a small, beautifully bound volume entitled The Blue Pearl. She made frequent use of her privilege to ask questions, and she received answers. More and more frequently, however, she was the one being questioned. In the beginning, it had seemed that Yennefer was not at all interested in her lot, in her childhood in Sintra, or the later events of war. But in time, her questions became more and more concrete. Ciri had to reply, and did so very unwillingly, because every question the magician asked opened a door in her memory which she had promised herself never to open, which she wanted to keep forever locked. Ever since she had met Geralt in Sodden, she had believed she had begun another life, that the other life, the one in Sintra, had been irrevocably wiped out. The witches in Caer Morhen never asked her about anything, and, before coming to the temple, Geralt had even prevailed upon her not to say a word to anyone about who she was. Neneca, who of course knew about everything, saw to it that to the other priestesses and the novices, Ciri was exceptionally ordinary, an illegitimate daughter of a knight and a peasant woman, a child for whom there had been no place either in her father's castle or her mother's cottage. Half of the novices in Melitele's temple were just such children. And Yennefer, too, knew the secret. She was the one who could be trusted. Yennefer asked about it, about Sintra. "How did you get out of the town, Ciri? How did you slip past the Nilfgaardians?" Ciri did not remember. Everything broke off, was lost in obscurity and smoke. She remembered the siege, saying goodbye to Queen Calanthe, her grandmother. She remembered the barons and knights forcibly dragging her away from the bed where the wounded, dying Lioness of Sintra lay. She remembered the frantic escape through flaming streets, bloody battle, and the horse falling. She remembered the black rider in a helmet adorned with the wings of a bird of prey. And nothing more.
"I don't remember. I really don't remember, Lady Yennefer."
Yennefer did not insist. She asked different questions. She did so gently and tactfully, and Ciri grew more and more at ease. Finally, she started to speak herself. Without waiting to be asked, she recounted her years as a child in Sintra and on the Isles of Skellige, about how she learned about the law of surprise, and that fate had decreed her to be the destiny of Geralt of Rivia, the white-haired witcher. She recalled the war, her exile in the forests of Transriver, her time among the druids of Angren, and the time spent in the country, how Geralt had found her there and taken her to Caer Morhen, the witch's keep, thus opening a new chapter in her short life. One evening, of her own initiative, unasked, casually, joyfully, and embellishing a great deal, she told the enchantress about her first meeting with the witcher in Brokilon Forest, amongst the dryads who had abducted her and wanted to force her to stay and become one of them.
"Oh," said Yennefer on listening to the story, "I'd give a lot to see that. Geralt, I mean. I'm trying to imagine the expression on his face in Brokilon when he saw what sort of surprise destiny had concocted for him. Because he must have had a wonderful expression when he found out who you were." Ciri giggled, and her emerald eyes lit up devilishly.
"Oh, yes," she snorted. "What an expression! Do you want to see? I'll show you.
Look at me.
Yennefer burst out laughing.
That laughter,
thought Ciri, watching swarms of black birds flying eastwards.
That laughter, shared and sincere, really brought us together, her and me. We understood, both she and I, that we can laugh and talk together about him, about Geralt. Suddenly we became close, although I knew perfectly well that Geralt both brought us together and separated us, and that's how it would always be. Our laughter together brought us closer to each other, as did the events 2 days later, in the forest on the hills. She was showing me how to find... I don't understand why I have to look for these... I've forgotten what they're called again. Intersections, prompted Yennefer, picking off the burrs which had attached themselves to her sleeve as they crossed the scrubs. I'm showing you how to find them, because they're places from which you can draw the force. But I know how to draw the force already, and you taught me yourself that the force is everywhere. So why are we roaming around in the bushes? After all, there's a great deal of force in the temple. Yes, indeed. There is a fair amount there. That's exactly why the temple was built there, and not somewhere else. And that's why, on temple grounds, drawing it seems so easy to you. My legs hurt. Can we sit down for a while?
All right, my ugly one.
Lady Yennefer?
Yes?
Why do we always draw the force from water veins? Magical energy, after all, is everywhere. It's in the earth, isn't it? In air, in fire.
True. And earth. Here, there's plenty of earth around here, under our feet. And air is everywhere. And should we want fire, it's enough to light a bonfire, and you are still too weak to draw energy from the earth. You still don't know enough to succeed in drawing anything from air. And as for fire, I absolutely forbid you to play with it. I've already told you, under no circumstances are you allowed to touch the energy of fire.
Don't shout. I remember.
They sat in silence on a fallen dry tree trunk, listening to the wind rustling in the treetops, listening to a woodpecker hammering away somewhere close by. Ciri was hungry, and her saliva was thick from thirst, but she knew that complaining would not get her anywhere. In the past, a month ago, Yennefer had reacted to such complaints with a dry lecture on how to control such primitive instincts. Later, she had ignored them in contemptuous silence. Protesting was just as useless and produced as few results as sulking over being called Ugly One. The magician plucked the last burr from her sleeve.
She's going to ask me something in a moment, thought Ciri. I can hear her thinking about it. She's going to ask about something I don't remember again, or something I don't want to remember. No, it's senseless. I'm not going to answer. All of that is in the past, and there's no returning to the past. She once said so herself. Tell me about your parents, Ciri. I can't remember them, Lady Yennefer. Please try to. I really don't remember my papa, she said in a quiet voice, succumbing to the command. Except... practically nothing. My mamma, I do. She had long hair, like this. And she was always sad. I remember. No, I don't remember anything. Try to remember, please. I can't. Look at my star.
Seagulls screamed, diving down between the fishing boats where they caught scourings and tiny fish emptied from the crates. The wind gently fluttered the lowered sails of the drakkars, and smoke, quelled by drizzle, floated above the landing stage. Triremes from Sintra were sailing into the port, golden lions glistening on blue flags. Uncle Krach, who was standing next to her with his hand, as large as the paw of a grizzly bear, on her shoulder, suddenly fell to one knee. Warriors, standing in rows, rhythmically struck their shields with their swords. Along the gangplank towards them came Queen Calanthe, her grandmother, she who was officially called Ardhrena, the highest queen on the Isles of Skellige. But Uncle Krach and Krait, the Earl of Skellige, still kneeling with bowed head, greeted the Lioness of Sintra with a title which was less official, but considered by the islanders to be more venerable.
Heal, Modron!
Princess,
said Calanthe, in a cold and authoritative voice, without so much as a glance at the Earl.
Come here. Come here to me, Ciri.
Her grandmother's hand was as strong and hard as a man's, her rings cold as ice.
Where is East?
The king, stammered Krach. Is at sea, Modron. He is looking for the remains, and the bodies, since yesterday.
Why did he let them? Shouted the queen. How could he allow it? How could you allow it, Krach? You're the Earl of Skellige. No Drakkar is allowed to go out to sea without your permission. Why did you allow it, Krach?
Uncle Krach bowed his head even lower.
Horses, said Calanthe. We're going to the fort, and tomorrow at dawn I am setting sail. I am taking the princess to Sintra. I will never allow her to return here. And you? You have a huge debt to repay me, Krach. One day I will demand repayment.
I know, Modron.
If I do not claim it, she will do so.
Calanthe looked at Ciri.
You will repay the debt to her, Earl.
You know how.
Krach and Krait got to his feet, straightened himself, and the features of his weather-beaten face hardened. With a swift move, he drew from its sheath a simple steel sword, devoid of ornaments, and pulled up the sleeve of his left arm, marked with thickened white scars.
Without the dramatic gestures, snorted the queen, save your blood. I said, one day. Remember.
Ein megledief, zvir eblodjish, ardrinar, leonarth ebsintra.
Krach and Krait, the Earl of the Isles of Skellige, raised his arms and shook his sword. The warriors roared hoarsely and beat their weapons against their shields.
I accept your oath. Lead the way to the fort, Earl.
Ciri remembered King Aeth's return, his stony, pale face, and the queen's silence. She remembered the gloomy, horrible feast at which the wild, bearded sea-wolves of Skellige slowly got drunk in terrifying silence. She remembered the whispers.
Geish Muir. Geish Muir.
She remembered the trickles of dark beer poured onto the floor, the horns smashed against the stone walls of the hall in bursts of desperate, helpless, senseless anger.
Geish Muir. Pavetta.
Pavetta. The princess of Sintra and her husband, Prince Duni. Ciri's parents. Perished. Killed. Geish Muir, the curse of the sea, had killed them. They had been swallowed up by a tempest which no one had foreseen, a tempest which should not have broken out. Ciri turned her head away so that Yennefer would not see the tears swelling in her eyes.
Why all this? She thought. Why these questions, these recollections? There's no returning to the past. There's no one there for me any more. Not my papa, nor my mamma, nor my grandmother. The one who was Ardrina, the lioness of Sintra. Uncle Krach and Krait, no doubt, is also dead. I haven't got anybody any more, and I'm someone else. There's no returning.
The magician remained silent, lost in thought.
Is that when your dreams began? She asked suddenly.
No, Ciri reflected. No. Not then. Not until later.
When?
The girl wrinkled her nose.
In the summer. The one before...
Because the following summer there was the war already.
Aha. That means the dreams started after you met Geralt in Brookelon. She nodded.
I'm not going to answer the next question, she decided.
But Yennefer did not ask anything. She quickly got to her feet and looked at the sun.
Well, that's enough of this sitting around, my ugly one. It's getting late. Let's carry on looking. Keep your hand held loosely in front of you, and don't tense your fingers. Forward. Where am I to go? Which direction? It's all the same. The veins are everywhere. Almost. You're going to learn how to discover them, to find them in the open and recognize such spots. They are marked by trees which have dried up, gnarled plants, places avoided by all animals, except cats.
Cats?
Cats like sleeping and resting on intersections. There are many stories about magical animals, but really, apart from the dragon, the cat is the only creature which can absorb the force. No one knows why a cat absorbs it and what it does with it. What's the matter? Oh, there, in that direction. I think there's something there, behind that tree.
Siri, don't fantasize. Intersections can only be sensed by standing over them.
Hmm. Interesting. Extraordinary, I'd say. Do you really feel the pull?
Really?
Let's go then. Interesting. Interesting. Well, located. Show me where.
Here, on this spot.
Well done. Excellent. So you feel delicate cramps in your ring finger. See how it bends downwards? Remember, that's the sign.
May I draw on it?
Wait, I'll check.
Lady Yennefer, how does it work with this drawing of the force? If I gather force into myself, then there might not be enough left down below. Is it right to do that?
Mother Nenica taught us that we mustn't take anything just like that for the fun of it. Even the cherry has to be left on its tree for the birds, so that it can simply fall.
Yennefer put her arm around Ciri, kissed her gently on the hair at her temple.
I wish, she muttered, others could hear what you said. Vilgefortz, Francesca, Terranova. Those who believe they have exclusive right to the Force and can use it unreservedly. I wish they could listen to the little, wise, ugly one from Melitela's temple.
Don't worry, Ciri. It's a good thing you're thinking about it. But believe me, there is enough Force. It won't run out. It's as if you picked one single little cherry from a huge orchard.
Can I draw on it now?
Wait. Oh, it's a devilishly strong pocket. It's pulsating violently. Be careful, ugly one. Draw on it carefully and very, very slowly.
I'm not frightened. I'm a witcher. Ha! Huh? I feel it. I feel... Ouch! Lady Yennefer!
Damn it, I warned you. I told you. Head up. Up, I say. Take this and put it to your nose or you'll be covered in blood.
Calmly. Calmly, little one. Just don't faint.
I'm beside you. I'm beside you.
Daughter. Hold the handkerchief. I'll just conjure up some ice.
There was a great fuss about that small amount of blood. Yennefer and Nenica did not talk to each other for a week. For a week, Ciri lazed around, read books, and got bored because the magician had put her studies on hold. The girl did not see her for entire days. Yennefer disappeared somewhere at dawn, returned in the evening, looked at her strangely, and was oddly taciturn. After a week, Ciri had had enough. In the evening, when the enchantress returned, she went up to her without a word and hugged her hard. Yennefer was silent for a very long time. She did not have to speak. Her fingers, clasping the girl's shoulders tightly, spoke for her. The following day, the High Priestess and the Lady Magician made up, having talked for several hours. And then, to Ciri's great joy, everything returned to normal.
Look into my eyes, Ciri. A tiny light. The formula, please. Aina versios.
Good.
Look at my hand. The same move, and disperse the light in the air.
Ein in einje.
Excellent. And what gesture comes next?
Yes, that's the one. Very good. Strengthen the gesture and draw.
More.
More.
Don't stop.
Ouch!
Keep your back straight, arms by your side, hands loose. No unnecessary moves with your fingers. Every move can multiply the effect. Do you want a fire to burst out here?
Strengthen it.
What are you waiting for?
Ouch! No,
I can't. Relax and stop shaking.
Draw.
What are you doing?
There, that's better.
Don't weaken your will. That's too fast. You're hyperventilating. Unnecessarily getting hot.
Slower, ugly one. Calmer.
I know it's unpleasant. You'll get used to it.
It hurts. My belly. Down here.
You're a woman. It's a typical reaction. Over time you'll harden yourself against it, but in order to harden yourself, you have to practice without any painkillers blocking you. It really is necessary, Siri. Don't be afraid of anything. I'm alert and screening you. Nothing can happen to you. But you have to endure the pain. Breathe calmly. Concentrate. The gesture, please. Perfect. And take the force, draw it, pull it in. Good, good. Just a bit more.
Oh, ouch!
There, you see? You can do it if you want to. Now watch my hand, carefully. Perform the same movement. Fingers, Siri, look at my hand, not the ceiling. Now, that's good. Yes, very good. Tie it up. And now turn it around, reverse the move, and now issue the force in the form of a stronger light. Stop moaning. Control yourself. It's just cramp. It'll stop in a moment. Fingers wider. Extinguish it. Give it back. Give it back from yourself. Slower, damn it, or your blood vessels will burst again. Eek! Too abrupt, ugly one. Still too abrupt. I know the force is bursting out, but you have to learn to control it. You mustn't allow outbursts like the one a moment ago. If I hadn't insulated you, you would have caused havoc here. Now, once more. We're starting right from the beginning. Move and formula.
No, not again, I can't.
Breathe slowly and stop shaking. It's plain hysteria this time, you don't fool me. Control yourself, concentrate and begin.
No, please, Lady Yennefer. It hurts. I feel sick.
Just no tears, Siri. There's no sight more nauseating than a magician crying. Nothing arouses greater pity. Remember that. Never forget that. One more time, from the beginning. Spell and gesture. No, this time without copying me. You're going to do it by yourself. So, use your memory.
Eine Versius. Eine in eine. Ouch!
No, too fast. Magic, like a spiked iron arrow, lodged in her, wounded her deeply. Hurt with the strange sort of pain, oddly associated with bliss. To relax, they once again ran around the park. Yennefer persuaded Neneka to take Ciri's sword out of storage, and so enabled the girl to practice her steps, dodges and attacks, in secret, of course, to prevent the other priestesses and novices seeing her. But magic was omnipresent. Ciri learned how, using simple spells and focusing her will, to relax her muscles, combat cramps, control adrenaline, how to master her aural labyrinth and its nerve, how to slow or speed her pulse, and how to cope without oxygen for short periods. The lady magician knew a surprising amount about a witch's sword and dance. She knew a great deal about the secrets of Kaer Morhen. There was no doubt she had visited the keep. She knew Vesemir and Eskel, although not Lambert and Cohen. Yennefer used to visit Kaer Morhen. Ciri guessed why. When they spoke of the keep, the eyes of the enchantress grew warm, lost their angry gleam and their cold, indifferent, wise depth. If the words had befitted Yennefer's person, Ciri would have called her dreamy, lost in memories. Ciri could guess the reason. There was a subject which the girl instinctively and carefully avoided. But one day she got carried away and spoke out about Triss Merigold. Yennefer, as if casually, as if indifferently, asking as if banal, sparing questions, dragged the rest from her. Her eyes were hard and impenetrable. Ciri could guess the reason, and amazingly, she no longer felt annoyed. Magic was calming. The so-called sign of Ard, Ciri, is a very simple spell, belonging to the family of psychokinetic magic, which is based on thrusting energy in the required direction. The force of the thrust depends on how the will of the person throwing it is focused, and on the expelled force. It can be considerable. The witches adapted the spell, making use of the fact that it does not require knowledge of a magical formula. Concentration and the gesture are enough. That's why they call it a sign.
Where they got the name from, I don't know. Maybe from the elder speech. The word Ard, as you know, means mountain, upper or the highest. If that is truly the case, then the name is very misleading, because it's hard to find an easier psychokinetic spell. We, obviously, aren't going to waste time and energy on something as primitive as the witch's sign. We are going to practice real psychokinesis. We'll practice on that basket lying under the apple tree. Concentrate.
Ready?
You focus yourself quickly. Let me remind you, control the flow of the force. You can only emit as much as you draw. If you release even a tiny bit more, you do so at the cost of your constitution. An effort like that could render you unconscious and, in extreme circumstances, could even kill you. If, on the other hand, you release everything you draw, you forfeit all possibility of repeating it, and you'll have to draw it again. And as you know, it's not easy to do, and it is painful.
Oh, I know.
You mustn't slacken your concentration and allow the energy to tear itself away from you of its own accord. My mistress used to say that emitting the force must be like blowing a raspberry in a ballroom. Do it gently, sparingly, and with control, and in such a way that you don't let those around you know it was you. Understood?
Understood.
Straighten yourself up. Stop giggling. Let me remind you that spells are a serious matter. They are cast with grace and pride. The motions are executed fluently, but with restraint, with dignity. You do not pull faces, grimace, or stick your tongue out. You are handling a force of nature. Show nature some respect.
All right, Lady Yennefer.
Careful. This time I'm not screening you. You are an independent spellcaster. This is your debut, ugly one. You saw that demijohn of wine in the chest of drawers? If your debut is successful, your mistress will drink it tonight.
By herself?
Novices are only allowed to drink wine once they are qualified apprentices. You have to wait. You're smart, so that just means another 10 years or so, not more.
Right, let's start.
Arrange your fingers.
And the left hand?
Don't wave it around. Let it hang loose or rest it on your hip. Fingers.
Good. Right. Release.
Ah! I didn't ask you to make funny noises. Emit the energy in silence.
Ha ha! It jumped! The basket jumped! Did you see?
It barely twitched. Siri, sparingly does not mean weakly. Psychokinesis is used with a specific goal in mind. Even witchers use the sign of Ard to throw their opponent off his feet. The energy you emitted would not knock their hat off their head. Once more, a little stronger. Go for it.
Ha! It certainly flew. It was all right that time, wasn't it, Lady Yennefer?
You'll run to the kitchen afterwards and pinch a bit of cheese to go with our wine. That was almost right. Almost. Stronger still, ugly one. Don't be frightened. Lift the basket from the ground and throw it hard against the wall of that shack. Make feathers fly. Don't slouch. Head up. Gracefully, but with pride. Be bold. Be bold. Oh, bloody hell.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry, Lady Yennefer. I probably used a bit too much.
A little bit. Don't worry. Come here. Come on, little one.
And the shack?
These things happen. There's no need to take it to heart. Your debut, on the whole, should be viewed as a success. And the shack? It wasn't too pretty. I don't think anyone will miss its presence in the landscape.
Hold on, ladies. Calm down. Calm down. Why this uproar and commotion? Nothing has happened. Easy, Neneka. Really, nothing has happened. The planks just need to be cleared away. They'll make good firewood.
During the warm, still afternoons, the air grew thick with the scent of flowers and grass, pulsating with peace and silence, broken by the buzz of bees and enormous beetles. On afternoons like this, Yennefer carried Neneka's wicker chair out into the garden and sat in it, stretching her legs out in front of her. Sometimes she studied books, sometimes read letters which she received by means of strange couriers, usually birds. At times, She simply sat gazing into the distance. With one hand, and lost in thought, she ruffled her black, shiny locks. With the other, she stroked Ciri's head as she sat on the grass, snuggled up to the magician's warm, firm thigh.
Lady Yennefer?
I'm here, ugly one.
Tell me, can one do anything with magic?
No.
But you can do a great deal. Am I right?
You are.
The enchantress closed her eyes for a moment and touched her eyelids with her fingers.
A great deal.
Something really great.
Something terrible.
Very terrible.
Sometimes even more so than one would have liked.
And could I? When will I be able to do something like that?
I don't know.
Maybe never.
Would that you don't have to.
Silence. No words. Heat. The scent of flowers and herbs.
Lady Yennefer?
What now, ugly one?
How old were you when you became a wizard?
When I passed the preliminary exams?
13. Ha! Just like I am now. And how... how old were you when...
no, I won't ask about that.
16. Aha.
Ciri blushed faintly and pretended to be suddenly interested in a strangely formed cloud hovering over the temple towers.
And how old were you when you met Geralt?
Older, ugly one. A bit older.
You still keep on calling me ugly one. You know how I don't like it. Why do you do it?
Because I'm malicious. Wizards are always malicious.
But I don't want to. Don't want to be ugly. I want to be pretty. Really pretty. Like you, Lady Yennefer. Can I, through magic, be as pretty as you one day? You...
fortunately, you don't have to. You don't need magic for it. You don't know how lucky you are.
But I want to be really pretty. You are really pretty. A really pretty ugly one.
My pretty little ugly one.
Oh, Lady Yennefer! Ciri, you're going to bruise my thigh.
Lady Yennefer?
Yes.
What are you looking at like that?
At that tree.
That linden tree.
And what's so interesting about it?
Nothing. I'm simply feasting my eyes on it. I'm happy that I can see it.
I don't understand.
Good.
Silence. No words. Humid.
Lady Yennefer,
what now?
There's a spider crawling towards your leg. Look how hideous it is.
A spider's a spider.
Kill it.
I can't be bothered to bend over.
Then kill it with magic. On the grounds of Melitela's temple. So that Neneka can throw us out head first.
No, thank you. And now be quiet. I want to think.
And what are you thinking about so seriously,
All right. I'm not going to see anything now. I'm beside myself with joy. I was worried you were going to ask me another one of your unequal grand questions.
Why not?
I like your unequal grand answers.
You're getting impudent, ugly one.
I'm a wizard. Wizards are malicious and impudent.
No words. Silence. Stillness in the air. Close humidity, as if before a storm. And silence, this time broken by the distant croaking of ravens and crows.
There are more and more of them.
Ciri looked upwards.
They're flying and flying. Like in autumn. Hideous birds. The priestesses say that it's a bad sign. An omen or something.
What is an omen, Lady Yennefer?
Look it up in Du Dwimmermork. There's a whole chapter on the subject.
Silence.
Lady Yennefer, oh hell! What is it now? It's been so long. Why isn't he coming?
He's forgotten about you, no doubt, ugly one. he's found himself a prettier girl. Oh, no. I know he hasn't forgotten. He couldn't have. I know that. I know that for certain, Lady Yennefer.
It's good, you know. You're a lucky ugly one.
I didn't like you,
she repeated. Yennefer did not look at her as she stood at the window with her back turned, staring at the hills looming black in the east. Above the hills, the sky was dark with flocks of ravens and crows.
In a minute, she's going to ask why I didn't like her, thought Ciri. No, she's too clever to ask such a question. She'll dryly draw my attention to my grammar and ask when I started using the past tense. And I'll tell her. I'll be just as dry as she is. I'll parody her tone of voice, let her know that I, too, can pretend to be cold, unfeeling and indifferent, ashamed of my feelings and emotions. I'll tell her everything. I want to. I have to tell her everything. I want her to know everything before we leave Melitela's temple, before we part to finally meet the one I miss. The one she misses. The one who, no doubt, misses us both. I want to tell her that. I'll tell her. It's enough for her to ask.
The magician turned from the window and smiled. She did not ask anything. They left the following day early in the morning. Both wore men's travelling clothes, cloaks, hats and hoods which hid their hair. Both were armed. Only Neneka saw them off. She spoke quietly and at length with Yennefer. Then they both, the magician and the priestess, shook each other's hand, hard like men. Ciri, holding the reins of her dapple-grey mare, wanted to say goodbye in the same way, but Neneka did not allow it. She embraced her, hugged her, and gave her a kiss. There were tears in her eyes. In Ciri's, too.
"Well," said the priestess finally, wiping her eye with the sleeve of her robe. "Now go. May the great Melitela protect you on your way, my dears. But the goddess has a great many things on her mind, so look after yourselves too. Take care of her, Yennefer. Keep her safe, like the apple of your eye."
"I hope," the magician smiled faintly, "that I'll manage to keep her safer."
Across the sky, towards Pontar Valley, flew flocks of crows, croaking loudly. Neneka did not look at them.
"Take care," she repeated. "Bad times are approaching. It might turn out to be true, what Aethlina ap Eivainin knew, what she predicted. The time of the sword and axe is approaching. The time of contempt and the wolf splittered. Take care of her, Yennefer. Don't let anyone harm her."
"I'll be back, mother," said Ciri, leaping into her saddle. "I'll be back for sure. Soon."
She did not know how very wrong she was. You have been listening to an Orion audiobook. Blood of Elves, written by Andrzej Sapkowski, translated from the Polish by Danuzia Stock, and read by Peter Kenny. The executive producer was Pandora White. This is a Strathmore Publishing production, directed and engineered by Kate Jones at Soundtrack Studio and edited by Jake Whitlin. The text is copyright 1994 by Andrzej Sapkowski. The English translation is copyright 2008 by Danuzia Stock, and the recording is copyright 2014 by the Orion Publishing Group, an Hachette UK company. For information about other Orion audiobooks, visit the website at www.orionbooks.co.uk.